John Hamill has been fighting professionally for health freedom for 10 years and first got involved with alternative medicine after recovering from a life-threatening illness in 1980 via a suppressed alternative treatment mode after mainstream methods almost killed him. His personal belief is that herbs and other dietary supplements are gifts to all of us from our Creator. As such, he believes that it is highly immoral for anyone to try to restrict their availability or to do anything which would hamper consumer access. He is our first guest tonight, and then the roundtable guests will come in about a half hour as we talk about this incredible situation that's happening in Europe and could happen here in the United States and North America as well. John, welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you?
I'm fine, George.
Good. Hey, tell me a little bit, first of all, about your life and this incredible recovery that you were able to have.
Okay, well, over 20 years ago, I recovered from schizophrenia through a suppressed alternative treatment mode called orthomolecular medicine that involves the use of dietary supplements on a basis of lab work. I recovered from schizophrenia after smuggling vitamins into the last hospital I was in. I spent 4 years locked up in mainstream psychiatric hospitals where they almost killed me with dangerous, toxic psychiatric drugs. After only 3 weeks on the vitamins, I was doing so much better that they gave me a full medical discharge while scratching their heads, wondering which of their drugs were helping me. What I had to do was I had to hide the vitamins in a cavity gouged out from the underside of my foam mattress and take them secretly, because if they'd found them, they would have flushed them down a toilet.
John, it's amazing that you're here today to talk with us, because this alternative treatment saved you. How many people don't have that luxury, aren't aware of what you were able to do for yourself?
Most people aren't aware of this because this is a heavily suppressed alternative treatment mode. In 1972, the American Psychiatric Association published a very biased task force report intended to suppress the use of orthomolecular medicine throughout the end of time. It was a highly biased report. The person chosen to head the task force was selected as a result of his very well-known public bias against this approach to treatment, and he handpicked the entire rest of his committee.
Let's talk a little bit about this situation, first of all, in Europe, John, and get your take on why you think it could be a problem here. It's called Codex, and what is all this all about anyway?
The United Nations has an entity called the Codex Alimentarius Commission, which is generating standards to govern the sale of all food products. The ostensible purpose is that through harmonizing the laws worldwide, it would streamline the sale of these products. Theoretically, this would protect consumers, and it would help companies that sell these products, because they wouldn't have to have multiple products for sale in different countries. They could have one size fits all regulations, and they could have one set of labels for their products that would be good all over the world.
And that would also mean that favorite companies, chosen companies, might have the upper leg to produce these vitamins and minerals.
The largest companies want one-size-fits-all regulations, and they don't care what they have to do to get that. They're seeking increased market share, and they're quite willing to only sell glass bottles containing cotton wadding and only modest amounts of vitamins if it means they can get increased market share, which would please investors. Many of these large companies are publicly traded, and all they care about is money.
Now, it looks like in Europe, this is going to happen.
Yes, it is. The European Food Supplement Directive was passed into law, and unfortunately, legal efforts to restrict it failed. And there's going to be some serious problems over in Europe. And unfortunately, the European Union politically dominates what occurs at the UN's Codex Alimentarius Commission, which ratified a framework pertaining to vitamins and minerals on July 4th, just recently. And this coming November, they'll be filling in the blanks on allowable potencies for vitamins and minerals. And they threaten to do so in a very restrictive manner, consistent with the desires of the chairman of the Codex Committee on Nutrition and Foods for Special Dietary Use, Dr. Grossklaus from Germany.
Will they ever get to a point, John, where even vitamins and supplements, you're going to have a prescription to go get them? Are they going that far with this?
I would say that a lot of products wouldn't be available at all, with or without a prescription, at least not in high potencies. The numbers that the Germans would like to fill in those blanks to are as low as 225 milligrams for vitamin C, 5 micrograms for vitamin D, 15 milligrams for vitamin E, 5.4 milligrams for vitamin B6. And there's a table I can refer people to that shows the rest.
Now, for people in Europe who might right now be accustomed to just going to their health food store and taking care of their own situation, you know, maybe people, there are a lot of people who are very strong proponents of alternative medicine now. They want to take care of themselves. They want to build up their immune function. Well, if this kicks in on August 1st and they want to go to their local store and pick up a pack of vitamins or something, are they going to be able to do that at all?
Yeah, they will, because there's a grace period that they have in which to comply with the regulations that can actually take several years. So things aren't going to come down like a guillotine very suddenly that way. This is a highly incremental agenda that's being phased in with deliberate gradualness so as to not provoke a public backlash.
Now, to some who are saying, okay, George, this is in Europe. How's this going to affect us? You observed a member of the FDA who was part of, were they part of a Codex meeting in Germany, or were they watching? What were they up to?
Okay, I observed Dr. Beth Yetley of the FDA, who was our delegate at the Codex Committee on Nutrition, take an action in Germany in 1996 that was totally inconsistent with U.S. law when she seconded a Canadian motion to shift herbs out of Codex and over to a secret committee at the World Health Organization to which the grassroots has no action and where they'd be regarded as drugs, not as foods. This was done in direct response to a massive grassroots opposition to a Canadian motion to create a negative or no-trade list for herbs for the purpose of banning many safe herbs from international commerce. And when Dr. Yetley seconded this Canadian motion to shift herbs out of Codex and over to this secret committee at the World Health Organization, she acted unilaterally without consulting the rest of the people on the U.S. Codex delegation, some of whom would have objected. Her action ran directly contrary to current U.S. law, wherein dietary supplements are regulated as foods, not as drugs.
Now, did you jump up and down when you found out about this?
Yes, I did. Upon seeing this, I formed International Advocates for Health Freedom, and I began immediately pushing for congressional oversight of the FDA's actions at Codex. FDA immediately began doing spin against my message, and that spin was soon echoed by the pharmaceutically dominated vitamin trade associations.
And what happened?
Well, I kept on pushing for oversight. I kept on being blocked. A member of a congressional staff got fired for trying to help me get oversight. Then in 1998, something else happened. Prior to the next meeting of the Codex Committee on Nutrition, I got letters from several members of Congress telling Dr. Yetley, our delegate, not to put a biased, unscientific, pharma-funded paper on the table titled A Risk Assessment Model for Establishing Safe Upper Levels for Nutrients. I noted that this paper had never undergone a public comment period. I noted that it was based on toxicology formula originally intended for the evaluation of toxic pharmaceutical drugs, which was being misapplied to evaluate safe nutrients, resulting in numerous unjustifiable conclusions. And just prior to the 98 meeting, I challenged Dr. Beth Yetley of the FDA not to put this biased paper on the table. I showed her the letters from Congress. I informed her that to use this paper would violate U.S. law and would go directly against the will of the people and the will of Congress, but Yetley ignored me. At the 98 meeting, I was forced to stop videotaping by Dr. Grossklaus, the German chair of the meeting, and I subsequently got thrown off the U.S. delegation prior to the meeting in 2000. When I tried to get Dr. Yetley thrown off the delegation by Dr. Ed Scarborough, our Codex manager, instead he threw me off doing her bidding because she felt uncomfortable by my efforts to put her under congressional scrutiny.
Now, John, there's some of the vitamin trades that jump up and down and they say, you're an alarmist. Come on now, this is not going to happen. Congress can only change the laws. There's going to be no impact here. But you say, hey, that's not so.
Yeah, that's true. I say that it's not so. And Suzanne Harris of the Law Loft did a good job in looking at that question in an article titled, Who Says Whatever Happens at Codex Does Not Affect U.S. Law and Why Do They Say It? People can read that article at thelawloft.com. Harris states that Codex standards and guidelines act as a template or containment within which countries must then write their laws and regulations or face enormous political and legal pressure. She explains that if a country fails to harmonize its laws to a finalized Codex guideline, immense legal and political pressure can be brought to bear on Congress through the threat of cross-sector trade sanctions if we fail to conform to the guideline.
Why is this so important to these people, John? I mean, why do they want this passed? I mean, is there that much money involved in this?
There's a huge amount of money involved in the sale of dietary supplements, and the pharmaceutical industry has a business with disease. They don't benefit when people are healthy. They only benefit when people stay sick. Someone like me is their worst nightmare.
Well, what are they concerned about primarily, these big companies, the pharmaceuticals? What are they concerned about? Are they concerned about, you know, the average person going to his small health food store, picking up a pack of herbs or vitamins and just saying, you know what, I catch colds all the time. I want to build up my immune system. So, you know, I'll go get echinacea and some other things that'll make me feel better. Are they concerned about that, or is there a bigger picture here?
I would say that there is a bigger picture. However, that's certainly a large part of it. They do have a business with disease. They don't benefit when someone has a strong immune system and they can stay away from doctors and away from hospitals. They benefit when people are getting sick. They benefit when you get cancer, for example. They deliberately broke the sulfur cycle back in the early 1950s by moving farmers away from manure and starting them on using chemicalized fertilizers. Sulfur has an effect on the permeability of the cell membrane, affecting our ability to absorb oxygen. Cancer is anaerobic. It can't exist in the presence of oxygen. One way a person can avoid getting cancer is to ingest enough sulfur, which you can do by eating organic vegetables, also by using a dietary supplement called MSM. These kind of things pose a threat to the medical establishment and to the pharmaceutical industry.
You know, I once talked to a lawmaker, John, and I said, you signed this bill. You voted yes for it. And it was some horrendous bill. And he said, I got to tell you, I didn't read the whole thing. How many legislators in this country, when faced with the possibility of voting on things like this, or being forced to take things like this, probably have no idea what the ramifications are?
Yeah, that's true. There's thousands of pages in legislation such as the Central American Free Trade Agreement, and there's language contained within CAFTA which would force us to harmonize our laws to restrictive Codex standards. I was on Capitol Hill just a few weeks ago prior to the Senate voting on CAFTA, unfortunately passed in the Senate, and it's very hard to even get meetings with these people.
Okay, and why is there such a concern, John, with CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Act? Well, why are people concerned about that as it relates to what we're talking about tonight?
Well, the reason is because inside Section 6 of CAFTA, members are forced to form what is called a Sanitary Phytosanitary Measures Committee for the purpose of ensuring ongoing harmonization of our laws under the terms of the Sanitary Phytosanitary Measures Agreement in the world in the WTO trade agreement. And if you examine Article 3 of the WTO's SPS agreement, you'll read the following words, quote, "To harmonize sanitary and phytosanitary measures on as wide a basis as possible, members shall base their food safety measures on international standards, guidelines, or recommendations." And this pertains directly to these codex guidelines that were just finalized on July 4th.
So if we sign this, we basically are forced to accept those other guidelines.
That's correct. We are entering into a constant process of harmonization by doing that. The effort to expand NAFTA to Central America and the Dominican Republic, and then to further expand it throughout our hemisphere through the free trade area of the Americas, would create the rough equivalent to the European Common Market, which in Europe gave birth to this dictatorship called the European Union. There are some very powerful people and vested interests that would like to do exactly the same thing in our hemisphere. The Rockefellers had a book published by Harvard University Press titled Integrating the Americas, the FTAA and Beyond, which illustrates the high level of orchestration arrayed against us. There are powerful forces manipulating our Congress that are moving our country in that direction, and there's no apparent concern in Congress regarding the failed fiscal policies of NAFTA, which have caused a $917 billion trade deficit. If we continue with these failed policies, and if we continue to outsource jobs to the third world, as has occurred to a huge degree under NAFTA, and which would continue under CAFTA and the FTAA, we will see our country reduced to third world status, and we will be merged into a hemispheric equivalent to the European Union. And then we'll face the same kind of problems that our friends in the UK are facing right now when it comes to their access to dietary supplements.
Your website is IAHF.com, right?
That's correct. And on my website, IAHF.com, I have an email distribution list that people can sign on to on my front page. And in the Codex Emergency section, my first item there, I have material related to this battle against CAFTA, including a form letter that people can use.
All right, and I urge everybody to go take a look at that. His website linked up right with his name at coasttocoastam.com. Now, in a moment, we bring in health expert Dr. Robin Falkov, investigative reporter John Rappaport, and Dr. Terry Grossman as we talk about the system that will probably take your vitamins, minerals, and supplements away from you, at least your right to choose what you want. I'll be back in a moment with them. Thank you, John Hamill. This is Coast to Coast AM. You know, when I was younger, I really didn't think much about health matters at all. And then as I got to be a little bit older, I sure did. And all of a sudden, I now have three major obsessions in my life. One happens to be burned out light bulbs, which has nothing to do with my health, quite frankly, but I got to be honest with you. The other two have to do with basically your health first and foremost, and my job, my work ethics. I mean, I'm always here. I was here today, for example, 2 o'clock Pacific time. We'll be off the air at 2:30 Pacific time. So I have several obsessions in my life. I think they're healthy ones. And in so doing, I read a lot of books on health issues, what you can do to take care of yourself beyond mainstream medicine. Make no mistake about it. You know, I think mainstream medicine, by and large, does a pretty good job for us. There are some pharmaceuticals that are pretty dangerous. I'm not happy with the way the FDA gets these things to the marketplace and then puts them on the market, and then they yank them off very quickly because people have died. But there are other medicines that have been very helpful to a lot of people. So I'm not knocking that. But more importantly, our ability to be able to help cure ourselves, to be able to do things for ourselves, should be tantamount to everything we do. That's in jeopardy. That's why we're having this program. So when we come back, three heavy hitter guests, Dr. Robin Falkov, John Rappaport, investigative reporter, and Dr. Terry Grossman, we will talk about this entire situation of Codex, what really can happen. Can our vitamins and mineral supplements be yanked from us? Will we be forced to buy one or two from major suppliers? Let me introduce our guests to you first, and then we'll have a statement from each of them as we continue this roundtable discussion now. And then in the final hour, we'll open up the phone lines so that you can chat with them. Dr. Robin Falkov is a licensed acupuncture physician with extensive training in traditional Chinese herbal medicine. She is a diplomate, as they call it, of the National Board of Homeopathic Examiners and has worked with homeopathy or homopathy, depending on how you like to pronounce it, for more than 20 years. She has had one of the earliest wholesale accounts with the well-known pioneering Life Extension Foundation based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and has worked with nutritional supplements for more than 25 years. She currently resides in New Mexico and consults with patients by telephone and the Internet. Hello, Robin. How are you?
I'm fine, George. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great, and I'm glad you're part of the program today.
Thank you. I can't thank you enough for making this program available at this critical time for the American people. We are at a crossroads here where one vote by one congressman can make a difference.
Well, maybe this show will help. John Rappaport has worked as an investigative reporter for more than 20 years. He's the author of 5 books. He has written on medical fraud, deep politics, health issues for newspapers, magazines in the United States and Europe, including CBS Health Watch, Spin, Stern, LA Weekly. The LA Weekly, as a matter of fact, placed John's name in nomination for a Pulitzer Prize for an interview with the president of Salvador University, where at the time a military takeover had occurred. Now, John is a regular contributor to Coast AM and just goes out there and digs up the stories that are very important to you. John Rappaport. Hi, John. How are you tonight?
Great, George. Great to be here. And a very important show, very important material.
Dr. Terry Grossman is the founder and medical director of the Frontier Medical Institute in Denver, Colorado. His longevity medical practice attracts patients, including many VIPs from around the country and the world. He is the assistant professor of family practice at the University of Colorado School of Medicine and a member and board certified by the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, as well as the American Holistic Medical Association. Dr. Grossman is also a widely sought-after lecturer on longevity medicine throughout the United States and has presented keynote addresses at anti-aging seminars around the world. In addition, he's the author of The Baby Boomer's Guide to Living Forever and Fantastic Voyage, The Science Behind Radical Life Extension. Dr. Grossman. Hello, Terry. How are you?
George, thank you very much. Doing very well, thanks.
Let's start with you, Robin, if we can. And all your microphones will be on, just so you know it, so you don't shuffle your papers and things like that. Let's start with you, Robin, on this specific issue of Codex, the possibility of Americans losing their ability to buy the kinds of vitamins, minerals, and supplements they need. Why is this important to us? Why is this so important to you?
Well, this is so important to me because these are the tools that I use for my patients. These are the tools that the average person has access to without having to try to get a doctor's appointment or get a referral to see someone else to help them with a health condition. These are treatments or supplements, products that are available easily in health food stores, drug stores, supermarkets, where you can go and purchase something that doesn't have side effects. You know, you have to know what you're doing, and you have to be counseled by a healthcare practitioner. And when you've done that, these products are extremely safe to use. The comparison is just mind-boggling when you think of the numbers of people that are killed or injured by certain pharmaceutical medications like Vioxx, and you know, the comparison to vitamins and supplements doesn't exist. There are no deaths reported.
All right, John Rappaport, you are our investigative reporter. Your website, nomorefakenews.com, you bring a different perspective to this for us, where Robin and Dr. Grossman will talk about really the specifics of Codex in terms of medicine, what it means to us. biologically and physically. You bring a perspective of why this is being done. Give me your thoughts.
Well, there are several levels to this, George. The first obvious level is more profit for pharmaceutical companies. If they can push to the side this whole revolution, global revolution of people taking care of their own health and nutritional supplements being one of the major ways that people do this, and make these substances into essentially drugs and destroy the availability in the market for nutritional supplements, then their profit picture expands dramatically, and even more important, their competition goes away because, frankly, lots more people are having success with maintaining their health, their immune system, degenerative diseases by going the alternative route than they are by going the pharmaceutical route.
And this alternative medicine route is a billion-dollar-plus business, isn't it?
Absolutely, which is why you see certain hospitals and medical clinics and so forth that are very conventional suddenly saying, oh, yes, alternative medicine is very important, and so we're opening up a wing here. We're bringing in a few practitioners. None of this would have happened if it hadn't been for the grassroots revolution where people tell their doctors, bye-bye, I don't want your drugs, I'm going to do this a different way. So in the pocketbook is the first level, but the second level is really about what happens to populations who are, on the one hand, picture this, extremely healthy, alert, conscious, independent-minded, taking care of their own health, able to see through many of the lies that they are being broadcast in mainstream news and from the politicians, as opposed to a population that is really being turned into a gigantic hospital, new diseases being invented all the time, toxic drugs being given, people in a weakened, passive state, always thinking that they have some illness or disorder and that they can only exist by having a very tight link to a conventional doctor. Those people, in the second case, are much easier to control for any political purpose. And so hovering above the immediate idea of pharmaceutical profits is this idea of the way to control people politically is to not have them healthy, alert, on board with themselves as far as their own health is concerned. And we can get into that a lot more, all but right. That's the basic picture.
Dr. Grossman, you, of course, are an expert in anti-aging, and there's a lot of natural remedies out there that can help a lot of people. What's your involvement in this? Why has this become an issue for you?
Well, in the book that I wrote with Ray Kurzweil, Fantastic Voyage, Live Long Enough to Live Forever, we have a chapter in there called Aggressive Supplementation. And one of the tenets of our approach to age management, to living healthier for longer periods of time, is the aggressive use of nutritional supplements. And both Ray and myself take a lot of supplements, and with my patients, I use supplements as a key to medicine, and I take a great deal of exception to the idea that that vitamins and supplements need to be assessed as if they're toxic chemicals, because this is what's being done now. Yet these things have a track record of decades and decades of safe use by millions of people with almost no toxicity. A substance like vitamin B12. The toxicity of that, I think the only way that you could kill yourself with vitamin B12 is literally to fill your bathtub and accidentally drown in it. So there's a tremendous margin of safety with these things. Yet what Codex is doing is they're taking a toxic assessment model to look at these supplements. And I think this is a very misguided effort.
When we get into next hour, we'll just open up the lines with the three of you where you can also, with me, just chit-chat back and forth about this. Robin, specifically, what's going on with this push here in this country then? We've seen it pass in Europe. It takes effect in August. It looked like the courts were going to save it, and now not. What happens here?
Well, what happens here is that we are a signatory to the World Trade Organization, and there was an example that I use that John Hamill has given, where there were violations by the steel industry and pressure was brought to bear on Bush that we have to correct these violations, otherwise there'd be embargoes starting with citrus export. So that's a very powerful means of control, and since we have signed on to this, we have to obey these laws. It is so hard for Americans to believe that they cannot write to their congressmen and have these things remedied once this is all passed. And the big problem, and what I'm reaching out to all of your listeners, to everyone who hears this, to let them know that they have the power to make a difference. Each and every person here, if you would only make the calls, I mean, the number to call your congressional office is area code 202-224-3121. There's information on my website, which is linked through Coast to Coast, for form letters, for fax numbers, but each person's voice really counts to turn this around, to prevent this from happening here.
And this is a very real possibility, right?
This happened in Europe, and people think that doesn't touch us. Well, with all of these plans to ultimately have a one-world government where you will have the CAFTA formed and signed, and you will have the free trade of Americas following that. You've got everybody lined up here, and you join that together with the European Union, and it's a done deal. And, you know, our country will no longer be the country that we know and love. This will disappear. It'll be the cog in someone else's wheel.
Dr. Grossman, how'd they get this name, Codex Alimentarius Commission? Where did that come from?
Well, codex is basically, I think, Latin for code, and alimentarius means of food. So originally the Codex Alimentarius Commission was put in charge, I think it started in 1963, to ensure the safety of food and nutrients. And by extension, they have extended into looking at nutritional supplements.
Well, initially, then, when they did this, were their intentions good?
I think they were good initially, but over the years, they seem to have drifted into a different agenda.
John Rappaport, how did they get behind this? What happened? Who decided, hey, we can make some money if we pass a few more laws?
Well, you have a tremendous pharmaceutical influence inside Codex. And in fact, Codex, you could say, is an arm of the pharmaceutical industry, globally speaking, because that's what's happened historically since they've been debating this whole nutritional supplement issue since 1991. I mean, we've had a lot of time here, George, to, you know, get wise to what's going on. And finally, they, on July 4th, I may point out, which was really a thumb in the eye for the Americans, finally passed the resolution called the Guidelines for Codex in Rome. So you see increasing pharmaceutical influence, an increasing desire to control nutritional supplements and essentially say that they must be drugs if they do any good, because everything that does any good has to be a drug, you know, by their definition.
Mm-hmm.
And so the steamroller just kept on gathering strength, and the protests became simply not heard. I mean, I know many people who have been at Codex meetings, and they make suggestions and so forth, and they talk to representatives, but in the end, the chairman of the meeting never listens. This is all simply rubber stamped all the way
through.
And
it's done. Is it a blueprint, John, for things that could happen down the line in terms of worldwide forcing of, let's say, vaccines and things like that?
Well, sure, because, you know, when you eliminate the competition, then you have a clear field. And so if somebody says, well, gee, I could take nutritional supplements and remain immune strong against disease, well, suppose those supplements are not around, or suppose you've got to go to your doctor to get a prescription for a very low-dose supplement that's not going to do you any good anyway, and you've got to pay for the office call, and it's all now on insurance, and everybody's in the system, then many people in future generations are simply going to say, why should I bother with that? Let's go along with the medical strategy of getting, 12 or 15 vaccines, and that'll protect me, I guess, and that's the way to go. So absolutely, all of the horror stories that you can imagine coming down the pipeline that have to do with toxic drugs or vaccines that cause disastrous adverse effects in people, including death, would be the absolute monopoly. And people having the free choice to make up their own mind about whether they want to get a vaccine or they want to take nutritional supplements or whatever would be a thing of the past. It would be historical, and people would look back at it and say, gee, that was a quaint time when people, were doing all kinds of wildcat solutions. But of course, now we know that the medical system is really looking after us, mm-hmm. and they're our mommy and daddy, and so let's go that way.
Terry, in St. Louis, years ago when I did my talk show there, I used to have a regular guest on. We called her the Herb Lady. She'd come on and give herbal remedies to people, and people didn't go out to their local health food store and pick up their goodies and take care of themselves, and I hope it worked for a lot of people. But one of the things she said was you had to be careful about the kind of supplements you bought because they weren't all the same. So is there anything really wrong with regulation to try to weed out some of the companies that might be putting bad products out there on the market?
No, I think that would be a good objective. But nonetheless, assuming that the products are not manufactured improperly, I mean, there are all types of issues relating to manufacturing of supplements in terms of bioavailability, in terms of disintegration of capsules, in terms of not heating things up too much, doing quality assurance and quality control of what you're doing. But assume all those things are in effect, and I don't see where Codex has anything to say about that. I think all Codex is really doing is they're addressing the amount of ingredients that are allowed in each capsule. So in other words, they'll say that for vitamin B6, you can have up to, 10 milligrams or 15 milligrams or whatever they decide on. And in a vitamin C capsule, you can have 225 milligrams. Gone are the days that you can get 1,000 milligram vitamin C. That's all that they're saying. I don't see anything where they're actually ensuring the quality of the products.
All right, well, stay with us. Next hour, we'll bring everybody in, and we'll start talking about this specifically, about the supplements, what are the maximum levels for these supplements, who controls it, and what are we going to do about it. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Terry, the ability then to knock out the high potency of these nutrients, why would they want to do that?
Well, I think that, there is an agenda here that John Hamill alluded to earlier, and I think that they actually do have a modus operandi. And the first thing that they want to do is essentially to demonize supplements. And by demonizing them, they've created a fear in the public. And when the public responds with fear, then they're willing to accept the regulations because the regulations are going to protect them. So I think what they want to do is essentially they're denying the fact that nutritional supplements have more value than strictly to prevent deficiency diseases. Because what I learned in medical school, and I think it's what they're still teaching medical students today, is simply that vitamin C does not have much value except to prevent scurvy. And therefore, we know that somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 milligrams of vitamin C a day will prevent scurvy. That's all people need to take. And any more than that just creates expensive urine. And the same thing applies with the other vitamins. But actually, in nutritional medicine, a lot of people have come to realize that vitamins can actually be used as treatments for disease. And then this represents somewhat of a threat to the status quo of pharmacologically based medicine. And therefore, I think that's where this is becoming controversial.
Well, as a matter of fact, they are now, niacin, for example, a vitamin, right? Niacin is being used to lower cholesterol, but in order to get the real good stuff, you got to get a prescription for it.
Well, it's very interesting that you mention that because and it also demonstrates what could happen in the future with this, because niacin, I use niacin with patients who have high cholesterol every day, and we typically prescribe somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 milligrams a day, which is many multitudes beyond what's available in these new Codex regulations, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 or 15 milligrams. I mean, it's 100 times that. But in any event, we use pharmacological doses of niacin. And if we send someone to the health food store and say, okay, take 1,500 milligrams of niacin a day, it'll cost them about $15 or $18 a month. Most of practicing physicians are still a little uncomfortable with telling their patients to go to the health food store to fill their prescriptions.
Right.
And they'd rather write a prescription for prescription strength niacin. And so they do that. It's a little bit different. It's a time release product, which I think in some ways may not be as good actually, but nonetheless, that's what they've been trained to do, is write a prescription. And when the patient gets that prescription filled, it costs $150 for a month. So
the
price increases drastically as well. I think that's what we're also looking at in the future, should these regulations wash upon our shores as well.
Like you said, John Rappaport, follow the money.
Absolutely follow the money. You know, here's another thing that people have to understand. One of the missions of Codex was to decide what the role of supplements is. And they had basically two choices. They could combine them, they could separate them. One is prevention of chronic diseases, and the other is supplementation of daily diet. They completely ruled out even the possibility that they were going to consider supplements as prevention of chronic diseases, and so they went with the idea of supplementation of daily diet. That shows you that they have this fixed assumption that, oh, well, if you eat a decent diet, you're basically okay, and maybe you need a few milligrams of this and that, but other than that, really, there's no role for supplements. So that's another thing that people have to understand. And I must point out one thing, because there's a tremendous controversy about the effects and possible effects of Codex in the United States. One of the things that people have to realize is that Codex is linked up to the World Trade Organization. The World Trade Organization, which basically reflects a treaty, 172 countries, the United States is one of those, has decided that whatever guidelines Codex releases, even if Codex says, hey, this is optional, do it if you like, it's going to be mandated by the WTO.
To all the countries.
To all the member countries.
Yep.
No question about it. They've already said that. That's what they're going to do. Now, here's where the catch comes in. Let's suppose that Germany or Brazil, and they would be two major possibilities here, decide, gee, you know, we're trying to sell supplements into the United States. We ship them there. We have a little bit of sales here and there, but not a great deal. And we think that we're at basic trade disadvantage because the domestic sales of supplements inside the United States has all these high potencies, and they got millions of different supplements they can sell. How can we even, you know, we're being deprived. Our profits are being reduced. So let's go to the World Trade Organization and file a grievance against the United States and say that essentially the domestic sale of supplements inside the United States is proving to be a trade barrier to us.
Right.
And let's see if WTO will rule in our favor, because if they do, then the United States is bound by that treaty to change the law, domestic law, inside the United States. And that's how that can happen.
What would happen, John, to all these health food stores, these nutritional stores that are out there in small malls, strip centers, things like that?
Dead in the water.
All gone.
Dead. Which is what will happen, for example, in England if this European food supplement directives really does go through on August 1, and that will be the end of a major number of thousands of health food stores in Britain. People have to understand that many health food stores, not all of them, but many of them in the United States make their bones on selling supplements. They may have food there and people buy them and so forth, but it's the supplement business that really keeps them alive. And those mom-and-pop stores and even some of the bigger ones will just absolutely fold and go away if they can't sell the kind of supplements that people really want to buy.
Robin, let's talk a little bit about the supplements and their therapeutic value. And is there a comparison here between synthetics or natural? And if there is, how do people distinguish the difference between the two?
Okay, if I can just address the last point that John made, people can look and see what has taken place in Australia 2 years ago, and all the a large number of the tiny little health food stores and manufacturers have gone out of business when I think it was 1,500 supplements were removed from the marketplace there. For what you were asking about to differentiate the synthetic compared to the natural, with something like vitamin E, it's critically important that you get what is called mixed tocopherols. Years ago, the big push was that people thought if they were taking D-alpha, the one isolate of vitamin E, that that was the most therapeutic form, the most effective form. Well, lo and behold, as you find in herbal medicine and common sense, it's what occurs in nature, the mixed tocopherol that has the other components present, that is the most therapeutically effective. And for them to be talking about lowering a dose of vitamin E to a ridiculous amount of 15 international units, I mean, that's mind-boggling.
It's like you don't even need it then at that point.
Well, it's ridiculous. And, I mean, with other synthetics versus natural, they are just not equal. They don't have the same effect on the body. People have to learn how to read labels very carefully and ask questions and do their research. I have a case of someone in my family who has undergone a liver transplant. They had liver cancer.
Oh, my.
And the amazing thing, the feedback I'm getting now, is that the doctors and the nurses that are following him cannot understand why he is in perfect health. And he was on an incredible diet, an incredible regimen of nutritional supplements, homeopathics, and exercise. And he, with liver cancer, was in the best shape of his life.
That's incredible. Is milk thistle part of his regimen by any chance?
It was. Now, post-transplant, the patients are on immune suppressive drugs. So this ties my hands from helping him because I work to build the immune system, you know, the immune system to, you know, help that, to keep that strong. And were his immune system strengthened, his body might reject the liver. So that's a whole weird situation.
Now, obviously, Terry, when this CAC, the Codex Alimentarius Commission, started spending time on this, I mean, it's been going on for years, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's been going on for a decade at least.
All right, for 10 years, these obsessed people are working on this program, and they finally got it passed in Europe. Was there anybody there that had some good intent?
I think that, you know, one likes to give the benefit of the doubt to people, and, you know, I would like to think that they had some, you know, moralistic and humanistic agenda. But at this point, I think it's deteriorated, and I think this is kind of a different agenda that they have, and it's not clear to me that the welfare of the population is really what they have in mind.
You might be right. Now, we talked earlier as an introduction about pharmaceutical drugs and how they've worked for some people, but how they've not worked for some people, and that some of these drugs get approved by the FDA, and then they get yanked off the market. People have died. The companies guilty, I think, of suppressing the information in their testing procedures. What's really the difference between some of the prescription drugs and the safety value there in some of these vitamin and minerals? I'll let you start with you first, Terry.
Well, I've been a physician for over 25 years, and in the course of that time, I've covered emergency rooms, and I've seen patients in the hospital and the outpatient setting, and in that course of time, I'm sure I've seen tens of thousands of patients. I have never seen a patient hospitalized because of a vitamin or mineral overdose. I have seen I don't know how many patients hospitalized because of drug side effects
mm-hmm.
from prescription drugs. And in like a study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, people from Harvard found that 25% of outpatients had adverse drug reactions from prescriptions they were given by their family doctors, and 13% of those were serious. These are big numbers. And they're small compared to the hospital setting where stronger drugs are used. In the hospital setting, they estimate adverse drug reactions result in 100,000 deaths a year. Medical errors result in another 100,000 deaths. And outpatient adverse drug reactions result in 200,000 deaths a year. And this is all in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA. So we're talking about 400,000 people a year being dying as a result of adverse drug reactions, and essentially no one dying as a result of vitamin and mineral reactions. So the question I have is, why are we even being so concerned about regulating something that really has a tremendous margin of safety?
Now, let me ask you about ephedra, though, where, you know, some claim that a baseball player died because of that. He was taking too much, and apparently there was just a settlement in that particular case. Unprecedented, where the FDA got that yanked off the market. Some people swear by it, others don't. Where does that stand?
Yeah, ephedra does have, you know, significant, you know, it's a Chinese herb called ma huang, and it does have very powerful effects. And I don't think it would be inappropriate to take that off the shelves of over-the-counter status, because it does have pharmacological effects. But, you know, I think that that's appropriate, but it doesn't apply to vitamins. What we've been talking specifically about vitamins, which
right.
Codex only applies to vitamins and minerals. It doesn't apply to these herbs at this point in time.
Yet,
exactly. And I think that, you know, looking at some herbs that do have a greater degree of toxicity, such as ephedra, I think that does make sense, and I think that the public should have that information, and perhaps some of these things should be regulated. I think that's a good idea.
John, in this country, what is the procedure then for Codex to pass for it to have an effect, as it already is going to on August 1st, generally, in Europe? What's the mechanism of travel here for this kind of law?
Well, as I said, it depends upon nations outside the United States filing grievances against the United States because of the fact that our internal domestic sales allow, you know, great potencies and a very wide range of supplements.
So no specific law in Congress now that's going to do away with vitamins and minerals?
Not exactly. House Bill 3156, very important. This has been introduced. It's the Dietary Supplement Access and Awareness Act. And this is now a great threat. And I'm glad you brought this up, because people have to realize that there is a coordinated effort here. This is not just Codex.
There's a backup plan, isn't it?
We're talking FDA, we're talking Codex, the European Food Directive, we're talking CAFTA, which was mentioned earlier, another free trade treaty, and behind that is going to be FTAA, which is a treaty for all of North and South America. All of these bolster Codex, they bolster the WTO. The FDA and certain Congress people have been doing their very best, and they are tireless in trying to overturn the law in the United States, 1994, called DSHEA, D-S-H-E-A. That was the law that was finally passed at the height of the health freedom movement in the early 90s in America, which basically had a few flaws, but it did protect the consumer and give the consumer the right to purchase all kinds of supplements in the United States. There are people desperately trying to overturn that. And what they want is now that the supplement companies are going to have to prove that the supplements they are introducing newly to the marketplace in the United States are safe before they are put on the market, which means the FDA gets into the act, and these companies have to spend an inordinate amount of money.
And they don't have that kind of money.
And they don't have that kind of money,
no.
You see. And this whole activity is going on, and people have to be very aware of this.
They're going to squeeze them out just by the process.
It's the squeeze play. Codex comes in on the one side, and you have nations filing grievances against the United States and claiming that we have to harmonize our laws here to match up with Codex. And then you have people in the government, in the FDA, in Congress, with pharmaceutical lobbyists trying to knock down DSHEA and turn it into a bonanza for the FDA. And on this question of adverse events, I think it's very important, and ephedra, if this DSHEA law gets overturned, what you are going to see is, first of all, supplement companies are going to have to find a way, and don't ask me how they can possibly do this, to start reporting so-called adverse events from vitamins and minerals to the FDA.
How are they going to prove that?
Well, they can't.
No.
See, but they're going to be told that they have to do this. And then the FDA is going to come in behind that and say, gee, there's somebody in New Mexico, we think they died of vitamin E. We're not really sure, but we better be safe. So let's take certain types of vitamin E off the market because maybe one person died. Meanwhile, you've got thousands and thousands of people that had heart attacks and strokes from Vioxx, and it was only Merck that finally got scared and took the product away, at least for the time
being. Because they knew they were going to get caught.
Yeah, they knew they were going to get caught. The FDA had done nothing, and you've got all kinds of other toxic drugs out there that are still on the market about which the FDA does nothing. So people have to understand this is a coordinated squeeze play from many different directions, and it could very well result in overturning the law as it stands now in the United States.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back with our panel, Robin Falkov, John Rappaport, Dr. Terry Grossman, in just a moment on Coast to Coast. Now, each one of them, they have their own individual websites, of course. Robin's healthfreedomrights.com. You can get to that by going to coasttocoastam.com. John's nomorefakenews.com, nomorefakenews.com. And Dr. Grossman, a couple of them, fantastic-voyage.com. And then he's got fmiclinic.com. All of that linked up with their names on coasttocoastam.com. Back in a moment. John, if CAFTA is holding on by one vote, if that could sway it, what good is that if they sneak in the back door with CODEX and some kind of international agreement?
It's another part of the squeeze play. In other words, if CAFTA passes, then it strengthens the ideas expressed in the CODEX guidelines. It becomes yet another treaty that pressurizes the United States internally to voluntarily harmonize its own domestic laws about sales of supplements with international guidelines. That's kind of fancy language for saying you've got the FDA. They're very anxious to do this. And so they would now point to CAFTA and they would say, you see, well, this is just one more reason. Obviously, we have to get the Congress to act here because all these other nations are changing, and we're the only cowboy country left that thinks that people should have access to all kinds of different supplements. So there is this idea of pressure to create voluntary changes in domestic laws. CAFTA will do that as a treaty. The United States is bound to it, and the idea is if it passes and they get the votes in the House, then the United States has yet one more link in the chain that binds them to the idea of knocking out the Deshaies Law and freedom of choice and replacing it with something much more draconian.
You know, what I can't understand too, Robin, is how the FDA, for example, could then want to jump up and down to scrutinize vitamins and supplements when I don't think they're doing a very good job on some of these pharmaceuticals that are out there.
No, they definitely aren't, and the recent reporting on Vioxx and NSAIDs has certainly underlined that fact. And the other problem with pharmaceuticals, prescription medications, is that the side effects are underreported. You know, so what are they going to do if the reports don't come in? You have the average patient that thinks they don't want to bother their doctor or it's no big deal. Part of what I do when I work with a patient is educate them as to what they can expect and what they have to be prepared for and what's important and what has to be reported. And there are many pharmaceutical medications that are being taken by patients that I work with who are also under the care of medical doctors. And when they are taken in combination with nutritional supplements, so many of those side effects are mediated. You don't see them having these problems. But I'd like to address what Terry had mentioned before and add on about ephedra. In traditional Chinese medicine, ephedra has been used for over 2,000 years. And the beauty of Chinese medicine, Chinese herbal medicine, is that ephedra would never be used as an individual herb. It's used in combination with other herbs that sort of modify the effects of it, make it more bioavailable, make it a softer, easier on the body formula so that it is not harsh. For something like ephedra to be used in dietary preparations for someone wanting to lose weight, that's craziness.
All right. Terry, the ability for high-potency nutrients would be gone, according to what I'm reading, if Codex kicks in. Is that true?
Not exactly. Codex has kicked in. I mean, it has passed. It's become a law.
Well, I mean here, though,
For Codex to be adopted in the United States would actually require the repeal of DSHEA and an act of Congress. So assuming that those things happen, yeah, then these regulations and high-potency supplements would no longer be available. But this would require an act of Congress to do that.
But why would they want to do away with high-potency nutrients, though?
Well,
and give us lower doses because we'd have to buy more?
Well, I don't think we'd really be able to accomplish what we want to do, and I don't think that's really what their objective is. I think the real objective is the American people have really woken up to the fact that they can empower themselves. They have the ability to treat a lot of maladies.
Sure.
That they've been seeing physicians for and being treated. You know, there's really a revolution, and my eyes were opened about 10 or 12 years ago when I made the transition from the allopathic medicine that I learned in medical school, and I started using nutritional medicine. And what I did is I started to learn more and more as I began to treat patients with high blood pressure with nutrients as opposed to prescription drugs, and patients with heart disease with nutrients or cholesterol or whatever. And as I made this transition, I would ask the patients who I'd been taking care of before, would you like to continue with the prescription drugs, or would you like to try taking some supplements and vitamins and see if these can help you? And my eyes were open to the fact that almost 90% of my patients said I'd like to try the nutritional post. So patients really embrace this, and they particularly embrace it when they can do that themselves. And I think there is a jousting here, a power struggle, a turf battle, as it were, between the vested interests that would like to continue to sell medications and people who are waking up and taking the power into their own hands and beginning to treat themselves and their own families. But in order to do that, they need high potency quantities. The amounts of niacin, for instance, that are useful in treating schizophrenia, as alluded to by John earlier, are in the thousands of milligrams. And if you have a codex law that restricts you to buying pills that are only 5 milligrams, you would have to take, you know, 600 pills a day.
Yeah.
It would be completely impossible.
And nobody's going to do that.
No one can afford you. Something could be filled up with the fillers from the pills.
Yeah.
So they just, take the power away from that, completely emasculated.
Now, as this moves forward, then, what can we, and I'm going to ask each one of you, as Americans do to try to fight this? You first, John Rappaport. What can we do?
Okay. First, George, I just want to read verbatim from Article 3 of CAFTA, which is now very few votes away from passing.
And that's the Central American Free Trade Agreement.
Right. Article 3, to harmonize sanitary and phytosanitary measures on as wide a basis as possible, members shall base their food safety measures on international standards, guidelines, or recommendations. Well, that's Codex. So, you know, the wording is very clear. The United States is about to sign on to this. It's true that the law would have to be changed in the United States, but, you know, this gives a lot more oomph and punch to the idea of doing exactly that. That is not necessarily, you know, something that we can say, oh, that would be 20 years away. That could be right around the corner. So let me blend into what we can do. There are two short-term things. Long-term is a whole other story, but short-term, we need millions of people to start flooding congressional offices, Senate, House, with letters, with faxes, with phone calls saying, we want DSHEA, that's D-S-H-E-A, that's the 1994 law that's in effect now.
That's the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act.
That's right. We want that to remain as it was originally written and intended with no changes whatsoever. That is our position. We vote. We vote people into office. We vote people out of office. This is what we want. I was very active in 1992, 3, 4 in the health freedom movement when millions of such letters arrived at Congress. It did indeed have an effect. Short term, that is absolutely necessary. And we're not talking about one letter. We're talking about each individual person writing a number of letters and getting ready to write more in the future.
Because what this act is allowing us to do at this point is it gives us the freedom to be able to buy and use dietary supplements as we want, right?
Yes, and it places the burden of proof of any unsafety, which basically means adulteration, on the government as opposed to the manufacturing companies. And it opens, it basically admits that, as we've been saying, these substances are amazingly safe. There is a huge safety margin. And therefore, the government should stay out of regulation of these substances to a degree.
What would they do, though, to school the unscrupulous one? You know, maybe there's a company that wants to put junk on the market. Wasn't there a Japanese company years ago that pelted our market with that tryptophan or something like that?
Showadenka. That was certain batches of tryptophan that had been genetically engineered with bacteria. They were contaminated. They produced serious illness and death. That was taken away, and of course tryptophan was completely taken off the market. There's a whole interesting story about Prozac, which we can go into another time, because tryptophan was in a sense a competitor to Prozac.
Okay, and cheaper. And
well, cheaper. I think that's, if I can step in, I think that's an important point for you, George, with how you feel about coincidences, because when that happened, right afterwards, that was when Prozac was released, and L-tryptophan would be a safe treatment for people who were, you know, depressed.
Are you hinting, Robin, that maybe there was a campaign to get that off the market?
Well, I guess it was just a coincidence. I don't know.
And I don't believe in coincidences.
Well, you know, and here's the other thing, George, that I think is short-term very important. Groups that are working toward health freedom, and there are a number of them, have to assemble teams of scientists, talking about the people on this show, MDs, PhDs, whatever, who will go up on the Hill to Congress, who will write letters, who will write articles, op-ed pieces, who will step out of the shadows and make the points that we've been making tonight, that these food supplements are inordinately safe, because you can bet your bottom dollar, and it's already happening, that the feds have assembled their teams of doctors and pharmaceutical reps, which is a kind word for what I'd really call them, to go up on the Hill to Congress and say that these products are terrible and that we need greater regulation, et cetera, et cetera. So that is the other branch of the short-term strategy.
Robin, how important is a program like this as we talk about this issue? And my reason for that is it's not as exciting as what your dear friend Richard C. Hoagland talks about in the field that he's in. It's not about ghosts. It's not about UFOs, but it's information.
It's information that touches every single person's life, you know, and as I stated earlier, we're at a crossroads, and every one of your listeners has the power to turn this around. Just like John was saying, if we flood these offices with millions of letters and calls and faxes, we can stop this. I mean, that's incredible power. But the people of this country have been beaten down. The conditions that we are under now with the war, the political climate, so many areas of our whole, you know, everything affecting our lives, people think they can't do anything, nothing makes a difference. Well, they can, and that's the incredible service that you are doing, George, by getting this information out in time for them to act. I mean, as you said earlier, they can slip this in the middle of the night and put this vote through. So people have to start tomorrow making their calls and sending their letters.
Terry, would you be shaking your head if we were forced to do what the Europeans are going to do in August?
Oh, I think it would be a tragedy. I'd do more than shake my head. I'd probably take out my crying towel. I mean, this would really be a tragedy for the health of people. I mean, I think it's 85% of people in the United States are taking nutritional supplements of some kind or another. And, you know, they're taking, you know, powerful, you know, active supplements, amounts that do good. And if we're reduced to taking trivial amounts of supplements, it's gonna affect the health of the population very adversely. And I think we'll help to fill up the hospitals even more than they are now. It'll be a very bad thing.
Well, and also, John, as you pointed out, you know, I'm concerned, of course, about the ma-and-pa shops and stores. We've seen what happened when the big boys came in with their hardware stores, and the big boys came in with their pet supply stores. They crushed the little ma-and-pa pet shops and hardware stores. I mean, they were gone. And the same thing, I bet, would then happen to these supplemental businesses.
No question about it. And, you know, there are great heroes in those mom-and-pop stores. I know of several in L.A. where I lived for 35 years and all around the country. These were people that built their businesses on nothing except the desire of other people to remain healthy. They wrote articles. They printed. They mimeographed. They, you know, photocopied. They carried books in their stores that told people about health. They were the pioneers back in the 20s and the 30s who built these little businesses to be of service to the community. And these would be completely and utterly wiped out. And with that, a certain amount of spirit would die. And so people have to realize at least a little bit of the history, that this is a grassroots revolution. This is not coming from the government that people want to remain healthy or that supplements do anybody any good. Nobody in Washington ever stood up and said, this is a great thing, and it's an example of how people are free in this country. This was all from the bottom up in America, and that's how it happened. And then you had the gigantic health food stores eventually moving in when, you know, it was apparent that it was a billion-dollar business. But this was built on the backs of people who had farms, little farms where they grew herbs, people who were convinced that the mainstream American diet was a sham and that this was all propaganda, and they wrote about this and they talked and they protested. This is how this whole health freedom thing was built, and to decimate it would be more than a tragedy. It would be a crime.
Those of you who have your paper and pencil ready, get ready to write down this number. Robin, this Vote No on CAFTA phone number for people, you urge them to basically contact their congressperson?
Yes, and they can ask the operator who answers who the proper person is for their state. The number to call is area code 202-224-3121. And for those people who are online, there are form letters on my website, healthfreedomrights.com, and fax numbers and information that they can review before they call up so that they can make appropriate comments to be more effective.
How much money will be lost, John Rappaport, to the big boys if this isn't worked out, if this isn't passed, if this isn't forced on us? They're going to lose a lot of money?
Oh, yeah. They're going to lose everything, George, in the long run. Everything in the long run, because this revolution keeps on growing. People become more aware. I mean, you've got an MD sitting here on this show who's talking about this. And there are many MDs like that out there, and there are many non-MDs that are alternative health practitioners, and there are people talking to each other all over the country saying, guess what? I healed myself of this. I cured myself of this. I prevented this by taking the following supplements. The word gets around. This is that very fertile chaos called freedom upon which this country was built. And if this is allowed to continue, and forget the word allow, if we make sure that it continues in the long run, the pharmaceutical industry is going to go down.
All right.
Not just a little bit, but altogether. There will be very few drugs that people will be willing to take because they won't need them.
We're going to take phone calls next hour. All three of you, can you stay?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Okay, sure. We will do that. Yes, Terry Grossman, John Rappaport, and Robin Falkov in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast. A few more questions, and then we'll be on to your phone calls. Robin, what about, there's always spin in anything. And, you kind of alluded that, another pharmaceutical popped up after a natural supplement was taken off the market in some scourge and scandal. Maybe it was done on purpose. Are there spin doctors out there, out to do whatever they need to do to get this done? Robin? Is anybody there?
I'm here.
Hello.
Yeah, there you are. Where'd you go,
Robin? I'm sorry. We have new phones.
Oh. You missed. Did you hear the question?
Yes, I heard the question.
As you were rushing to the phone, right?
There are spin doctors, and there are reports that have been coming out about the hazards of vitamin E, and now they're coming out and trashing the effectiveness of vitamin C, and all I can say is that this has only just begun. You will be seeing more and more attacks on supplements that have been used for years safely and effectively to back up these positions that they're going to make with what they will consider or determine that they have found to be safe upper limits.
Terry, are you totally convinced that vitamins and minerals and supplements can be used to fight disease?
Yes, I have seen miracles. I have seen incredible results with people, with animals that just you would not, you're told something is impossible, and then you see things turn around, and what can you say? This is what it's attributed to, the use of nutritional supplements, the use of herbs, the use of homeopathics.
Do you agree with that, Terry Grossman?
Well, absolutely. I've treated, literally thousands of patients with, a multitude of diseases from, simple, everyday, common diseases to life-threatening illnesses. And, I don't eschew the use of prescription drugs. I use them when they're necessary. But I, try to use the natural substances first. And in the majority of cases, the prescription drugs are either not necessary at all or necessary in much lower doses. But these substances have therapeutic effects. They are very powerful, and they can treat a wide variety of maladies, and I think that they belong in the toolbox of treating physicians as well as families.
I've always believed, too, that this planet somehow has the remedy for any ailment that may be on the planet. I absolutely think, for example, the cure to AIDS just hasn't been found out there in some forest somewhere.
I think you're absolutely right. And, Robin's a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner. My wife's a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, and they use herbs that have been around for 5,000, that have been used for 5,000 years. And, it's hard to fool people for 5,000 years. If you might be able to do it for a decade or two or even 100 years. But for 5,000 years, you have to have a system that works. And they're relying on herbs, naturally found substances that aren't adulterated at all. And they've built an entire medical system that relies on this.
Robin, it's safe to say when Richard had his health problems, you nursed him back to health in an alternative medicine sort of way, didn't you?
Yes, and the focus of Richard's treatments were with homeopathics. From the instant that he was in the emergency room after the ambulance, I was giving him homeopathic remedies that I had with me. It was in they were in his drinking water. I gave him coenzyme Q10 before he went for open heart surgery. That dramatically decreases the amount of bleeding in a patient. I pleaded with his doctors to order intravenous nutrition supplements, which someone like Terry is a godsend to be able to be providing for his patients. And these doctors would not comply with that, and they told me, whatever I can give him by mouth, go ahead and do it. It's fine with them. And he's come out of this incredibly well. I mean, he will occasionally take his supplements, and sometimes I have to nag him. But immediately after his heart attack, Richard was on a very, very strict regimen. three times a day with nutritional supplements and the homeopathics in between, along with chelation therapy, intravenous vitamin therapy, hyperbaric oxygen chambers, and the result is miraculous.
To the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there. Where are you calling from, and who's your question for? Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Vicki, and my question is for Robin.
Okay, Vicki, where are you calling from, by the way?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in Pompano Beach.
Okay, go ahead.
Florida. I think this is an extremely important subject, and it's something that I've been screaming for years. I've been trying to find a good doctor, and what would be a good avenue to find a doctor? Because I'm on a plan, you know, an insurance plan, and trying to find a doctor through them is like, you know, weeding through a haystack trying to find a needle. Do you have any suggestions about trying to find a good doctor who would incorporate everything available?
Well, I just don't know if they would be covered on your plan. If you want to contact me privately, I lived in Florida for many years, and I might be able to make some recommendations for you. But there is an organization called ACAM.org, and they have a referral or a listing and a description of the different practices that these medical doctors provide. And I'm sure Terry could provide you with some other options for checking on treatment in your area.
Okay, good. Thanks, and good luck to you east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
David from Anderson, Indiana.
Hi, David.
I was under the impression that vitamin E, the synthetic version, is DL-alpha. And the natural version is D-alpha. And that I've only been able to find, just by casual looking, D-alpha vitamin E in expensive television-advertised multivitamins or in baby formula.
Who wants to take that question?
I can take it because it's available. There are many companies that make the mixed tocopherol form of vitamin E. You have Now Pharmaceuticals. You have Twin Lab. You can contact the Life Extension Foundation. Do you guys have any other suggestions?
No, there are many available forms in it, and it's actually important to take mixed tocopherols because the study that was done that so much hoopla was raised that showed a slightly increased risk of heart attacks with vitamin E was actually not vitamin E. It was actually strictly on alpha tocopherol. And if you take the mixed tocopherols with the gamma tocopherol mixed in it, then you don't have the same cardiac effects. And so it is important to take a mixed tocopherol.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you, sir. Let's go to our west of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, howdy, Greg, Ken, Wyatt, and Juno.
Hi, Greg.
Couple of questions, kind of two-pronged. One was, and this would go to anyone, what they thought the effect on the hospitals and surgery for different plans using herbal medicines, like drinking 5 cups of chamomile a day for 2 weeks to get rid of kidney and gallstones, and the other thing was the effect of herbs on the pharmaceutical market, like garlic for high blood pressure, or valerian root for sleeping, or black cherry juice every fourth day for livers. And again, I think it's great you guys are doing this. You know, back before the 60s and 50s, anyone that talked about herbs used to be called a witch. And I'll hang up and listen to your answers. Thanks.
He's right. John Rappaport, why don't you take that? You want to jump in on that?
Well, I think maybe the other folks on the line here would be more able to do that. But as far as the effect of herbs on the pharmaceutical market, there is no question that it has a profound effect on the pharmaceutical market because, for one reason, if you're taking a good herbal formulation, you have something that has many, many active ingredients working. You're not trying to, as pharmaceutical companies, some tend to do, okay, let's take this plant and let's take this one ingredient out of the plant, and let's throw everything else away, and then let's magnify this ingredient and really pump it up, and that's what we'll give people, and we'll call it Zubiza drug. Instead, in an herbal formulation, time-tested, clinically, so to speak, tested over decades and even centuries and so forth, millennia, you have many, many ingredients working in these plants to assist people and help people, and that is one of the great traditional forms of medicine. And the pharmaceutical approach, of course, does not permit this purely from a business sense because they want to patent whatever it is that they take out of the plant. They want to say, this is ours, it's proprietary, we have protection, only we can sell this for 7 years or whatever it is, and therefore this is the way we're going to go. One ingredient for one illness. It's a lunatic proposition to begin with that you're going to do one ingredient and it's going to knock out one disease. The traditional form was much broader in spectrum, and it still exists in every good herbal formulation.
Terry, thank you for making those very important points, John.
Isn't aspirin like the extract of willow bark?
Yes, it is. The salicylic acid. Aspirin is acetyl salicylic acid, and the willow bark is a salicylate also, so they do have similar.
All right.
Effects.
So when you go and get aspirin from the store, are you getting mushed up willow bark, or are you getting some synthetic aspirin? And then if you are, how did they make it? How did they create it? How do they know how to do that?
Well, I think that, you know, it was known for a long time that this substance that came from willow bark had properties as an analgesic. It reduced pain, it reduced fever, and had these beneficial effects. And they isolated this ingredient, and they made some modifications. They took the salicylic acid in the willow bark and acetylated it, a chemical process, and created a new compound called acetyl salicylic acid, ASA, and that's what aspirin has become.
It's got to be, I think, it could be the wonder pill of this planet.
Yes, it really does have dramatic effects, and if it were introduced today, it would never be an over-the-counter medication.
No, it'd be a prescription, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
I bet they're kicking themselves on that one.
I think so.
They'll find a way.
West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Kim from Phoenix.
Hi, Kim. Go ahead.
I just wanted to state that my herbalist and I started doing a lot of very serious, rigorous research into toxicity of certain herbs that have been used for many years, you know, including Ayurvedic herbs and Chinese medicinal herbs. And what sort of started this whole thing is that after taking a very helpful herb with Thania somnifera in the correct doses, I started, having huge amounts of sediment in my urine. And we did a bunch of research on it and found out that in the common doses that it does cause kidney lesions and also liver lesions. And went on to, study a lot of commonly used herbs, and the ones, many that are tested for toxicity, even in the right Chinese medicinal synergistic combinations, turn out to be actually, quite kidney toxic. And it doesn't mean that this codex is good, and I've seen, people with hepatitis C get rid of it doing certain herbs, but most herbs are not really tested for that kind of thing where they test the mice and they cut open their kidneys and see what's happened. So I think it's something that our government should, if they want to spend their time messing around with this, they really care about us, they could put their energy into doing more testing on herbs that seem to have benefit.
Well, go ahead. It sounds like you wanted to say something. Right?
Yeah, if I can step in here, there are Chinese herbal companies that do rigorous testing of all of the components that are used in making up their products, because a lot of times there can be contamination of these herbs, or the potency is not what it is supposed to be active in a formula, or it can be above and beyond what is called for. And you have to check on how these herbal formulas are made and how they are determined to be you know, what they're claiming on the label. And I didn't hear what it was that you said you had the problem with.
She's on her radio now, Robin.
Oh, okay.
Do we risk the extinction of some of these herbal remedies because we're using them up too fast?
Well, echinacea is in limited quantities. I've also had a vitamin and health food business for over 20 years, and I know the prices have gone, you know, they've gone up on echinacea because of the popularity, and the availability is decreased. And you have something like echinacea that should be taken short term, and many people think, well, gee, this is fine. It'll help my immune system. I'll take it all winter long. You know, this is where the proper healthcare practitioner is critically important, because there are side effects, there are treatment plans to be safe and to be the most effective.
John Rappaport, you and I have talked over the years about how we're getting the short end of the stick, getting ripped off, getting used by some of the big corporations in this country. This seems to me to be still another one of those things.
No question about it, George. In this case, we're talking about pharmaceutical companies and their collaboration with governments. What most people tend to gloss over is the fact that we're not talking about free market capitalism here. These companies and many other types of corporations are all too eager to cooperate, to influence, to spend millions upon millions of dollars in lobbying and so forth in order to get their way, and they want to cooperate with governments because they realize that that is the ultimate road to monopoly. So that is obviously happening here. And in the last caller's question, there's a kernel of this. You see, there's a tendency to say, oh, well, I tried to take this and it caused problems, so therefore I really want the government to study this and do something about it, so forth and so on. That sounds okay. Okay, fine. But when the government does that, specifically in this case, say the FDA, this is the way they want to get their hooks in. They are not primarily interested as an organization or an influence in simply saying, oh, well, there is a problem with this little thing here, and so we better put a warning box, a label on the box or whatever. They're interested in controlling the entire market of natural health and ultimately eliminating it.
Stay
That's
with us.
Their agenda. So what's the choice then? Well, the choice is that in a free society, as mentioned by Robin, you have a very good health practitioner who knows what he or she is doing. You have private groups. You have universities who issue letters of recommendation and information and background to help people do their own research so they can take these natural supplements and do it in the right way. That's the long-term solution, not to say government take over.
We'll be back in a moment. We'll wrap it up with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And before we go back to phone calls, each of you, let me give you just a few moments to basically summarize how you feel about this entire issue. Then we'll go back to new calls. Terry, we'll start with you, Dr. Grossman.
Well, I think that, you know, the American public has an opportunity here to preserve the freedom that we've enjoyed for quite a long period of time. And I think it's really incumbent on each of us to protect that freedom by continuing to write letters. This is going to be a long struggle. This isn't going to go away overnight. And they're not going to be able to take our freedom to pick these supplements to use for ourselves away from us overnight. So we just need to stay involved and continue to write letters and contact our congressmen and use our voting power to not allow this to come to pass.
How about you, Robin?
Well, I agree with what Terry has said, and there are many people who have told me they think, well, they can get these supplements in the black market. It's not going to happen if all these small business people are manufacturers are forced out of business. These things won't be available. George, do you remember the Mel Gibson public service announcement of years ago?
The Mel Gibson, which one? Remind me now.
This was where there was a public service announcement commercial showing Mel Gibson in his kitchen, and somebody's trying to beat down the door, and it's the police coming in to arrest him because he's got vitamins in his cabinet.
I don't remember that.
Oh, gosh. Well, this PSA had been done by Kevin Miller. He's an international award-winning filmmaker, and he has the website WellTV.com. he's made available for a free download. Anyone who goes to his site, 30 minutes of the version of his new movie, We Become Silent, and it is an excellent vehicle for people to understand the attempts by the multinational pharmaceutical interests and the giant food companies in concert with the World Trade Organization, the World Health Organization, and others to limit the public's access to herbs, vitamins, and all these other healing therapies. And this is free.
Okay, John Rappaport, yours.
Yeah. You know, George, as we discussed earlier, the principal idea that we all learned when we grew up was this was supposed to be a nation that was about freedom. That means when you translate that into health, that you have the absolute right to decide what to put in your body or not to put in your body to improve your health. You make the choices. You do the research. You consult whom you want or not, and you make up your mind. The level of hypnosis that has been overtaking this country over the last decades has sublimated all that, and there are many people who no longer even understand that. And to me, the fundamental fact to wake up with is that you decide. Nobody can tell you what to put in your body or not to put in your body. Any attempt to do that is completely criminal and against what everything that a human being is based upon, and that's where you start, and that's where you get the power and the force and the motivation and the desire to stay in this struggle long enough to make sure that we win.
To the phones we go. First time caller line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening.
Yeah, hi. Where are you calling from and who's it for?
Bellingham, Washington, for Robin.
All right, sir. Go ahead.
I have multiple sclerosis, and I've pretty much, I won't say cured, but got rid of it with supplementation, and I'm actually a distributor for a company, direct company, who has patented supplements, patented process, fructose bonding, chelation. I'm just wondering, are those going to be affected?
Well, everything will be affected. All supplements.
Even if there's a patent on them? Government patent.
If the pharmaceutical companies are going to take them over and sell them, whatever price you're getting that for now, you can expect that to go through the roof, and it might not be available.
Well, that's true too. They would just basically say that can't be sold here, right?
Yeah, that can happen. That can happen very easily.
So that's why we got to fight it.
Well, and it's great to hear your story, and that should inspire so many others to take action and make sure that we preserve these rights, that we can have access to all these supplements.
Wildcard Line, you're up on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. My name's Tim. I'm calling from Virginia.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, I got a question and a comment. I was going to ask your guests if they know anything about this. I read in a book a couple months ago that asthma is a deficiency of zinc in the blood carrying oxygen to the lungs. I was wondering if they knew anything about their comment on it. And then my comment was, all the letters and phone calls and faxes that we've been doing, I've been doing it for the last 2 years, and nobody's ever called me back. And the only way that anybody's going to listen to us now, and the American people, is by force, and that's the only way they'll listen to us. They became impotent to us. And I'll take this off the air.
Terry, do you want to chat about this?
Yeah, zinc and copper oppose one another in the body. There's a balance between them. And calcium, magnesium do the same thing. And if you have a balance more towards zinc, you can increase the elasticity of the lungs, which is one of the problems in asthma. And if you have a more magnesium as opposed to calcium, you can relax the airways. So those are biochemical natural ways of modifying asthma, exactly.
All right, thank you. Let's pick it up by going west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Olin in Culver City, California.
All right.
We keep getting new strains of flu. In 1918, the swine flu killed over 1 million people worldwide. I was wondering if Mr. Rappaport might think that Codex could be a setup for germ warfare to give new strains of flu and reduce overpopulation.
Oh, don't get him started. But since he asked you, John, I'll let you answer.
No, man, that's a 50-part question, right? First of all, there's been tremendous fear-mongering about flu and flu strains, which George and I have discussed many times on the show. And so my basic proposition, without going into all the backup, is that this is an attempt to scare people, and there is no flu pandemic on the horizon. This is backed up by simple statistics of how many cases and so forth, and this is basically another propaganda effort to attempt to scare people into taking pharmaceuticals and vaccines and thinking that, you know, we're all terrorized and that there's no hope and so forth and so on. And there's depopulations agendas involved behind all of this, but it would take a while to spell that out. But I think that covers your question.
It's a whole show by itself, John.
Yeah, right.
Next up, Wildcard Lion, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, this is Ann.
Hello, Ann.
I'm in Texas.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Deep in the heart of Texas. Yes, I am, and it's hot down here. I'd like them to talk about, I happen to be the mom who had the bill introduced in the Texas legislature to prohibit the sale and promotion of creatine to our high school kids or our public school kids. This came about when it was actually being sold in the locker room of my son, who was a football player. And when I voiced my opinion that this is my decision to make, not the coach's to make, the only response I got was, well, the school down the road is doing it, and if your kid doesn't do it, he will be at a disadvantage. And I felt like I had to go to the legislature. It passed unanimously. It is now prohibited in the state of Texas. It is a criminal offense. So this, and I believe in herbs. I've ephedra. I've used that for mild bronchial asthma when I get it in relation to allergies. I have no problem with using alternative medication, not at all. But where do we draw the line on this? How do I protect, for example, my child from the pressure that can be put on him at a very critical age in using the sports enhancement dietary supplements?
Terry, I'll let you take this.
Well, you raise a very good question, and there's no simple answer to this, because, you know, we need to walk a fine line. When you have freedom, you have to use it wisely, and in a case of a high school setting where you have, you know, social pressures for children to use certain substances for whatever, you know, creatine, it causes muscles to look bigger. People are not stronger when they take creatine. It just causes more fluid to accumulate in the muscle, so there's the appearance of bulk and things like that. So weightlifters like to take it before they're in competitions, things like that. But, you know, there are some side effects that are associated with creatine. Some of them are quite serious when it's taken in massive overdoses. When it's taken in small doses, it doesn't cause any significant problems. And, you know, it brings us to the central point of how to address, you know, the potential toxicity of some substances. Now, we're not talking about a vitamin. We're talking about an amino acid, which is different. But nonetheless, the real key here is maybe not to legislate against everything that has a toxic effect, but instead maybe to provide more information, to provide the information in the labeling with the substances that are being sold so that consumers have this information and they know how to make proper choices. So I think that may be a good compromise for how people can learn about the substances and use them wisely.
Okay, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Hi there, you're on Coast to Coast.
Yes, hi, I'm calling from San Diego.
Yeah, hi, go ahead, sir.
Hi, I have a question. I know of a company that one of their selling points is that their supplements are, they call them pharmaceutical grade, which means they use good manufacturing practices that are required normally for pharmaceuticals. And that means that, you know, there's a guarantee that what's on the label actually is in the supplement. So, you know, in that sense, pharmaceuticals used as sort of has a good connotation. Is there a way that some regulations could be helpful that, you know, a company has to guarantee or has to prove that what's in the supplement actually, or what's on the bottle is in the supplement, without getting us in trouble so that these are not going to be available anymore?
Robin, you want this?
Sure. I mean, there's the way through public pressure to only support the companies that are manufacturing supplements that have undergone the rigorous standards and testing that show that that is what is in the product. And you don't buy the other products, you know. You get what you pay for. When you buy these cheap products, they're lower quality. They're often not bioavailable, which means you can't utilize them. So you have to do your research once again. I mean, that is the important thing, that you do your research into what you're taking and into the companies that are making them. But you don't want overregulation by the government, because it's all going to disappear.
I can add one more point to this.
Sure.
Look at it this way. If a company is manufacturing some kind of a supplement and they're saying, well, you know, uniformly proper manufacturing standards or whatever, there are laws on the books about this already. We don't need to have a whole new bureaucracy created that's going to wipe out the entire supplement field under the guise of protecting the consumer. It's called fraud. You know, if a supplement manufacturer says there's 70 milligrams of this ingredient,
and there's 10.
And there's 10, then they can be prosecuted. And that's a crime. It's fraud. So we're covered already under that.
And who would be the watchdog, the laboratory, John, to check into that?
Yeah. Well, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is the federal agency, and there are state agencies as well. I mean, there's already a gigantic bureaucracy here to cover this kind of fraud. So they would be the ones to investigate and to see what the situation is. And, you know, once you start to say, okay, well, let's cross the line. Let's say that every supplement manufacturer has to go through a rigorous approval on many fronts by the FDA and so forth before they can even put something on the market. Then you have let the government in the door so far, that's what exactly they want, and they will go much further. They will go all the way to the wall, and they will implement the Kodak stuff and the CAFTA stuff, and they'll knock out the Shea laws, and they will eventually take everything that you want off the market.
All right, thanks for that response, and thanks for the question. How much time? We'll take one or two more calls and wrap things up. East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I'm James from Alabama.
Sure.
Let's have a couple of quick comments and a very quick question.
All right, James.
The comment is about the scare tactics they were talking about. It reminded me of what I think the textile companies did with hemp some years ago, which started a $1 trillion drug war. And the other thing was that I'm an ex-airline pilot. I was down in West Africa a few years ago, in Ouagadougou of all places, and my whole crew got this food poisoning. My engineer had it, and he was okay by the time we left, and on the way back, my first officer got it. He couldn't even fly the airplane. 3 hours out of Germany, I got it as well, but I got on oxygen. And after 30 minutes of oxygen, all the symptoms went away. And believe me, it was coming out of every end, and it was hot flashes and cold chills and fever, everything. But then my question was, is it okay to take vitamin E, and what could I take for depression?
Well, for depression, you know, the herb St. John's wort has been shown in double-blind studies to be very effective. So that's particularly safe. There is another supplement called SAMI, S-adenosylmethionine, is safe and effective and works very quickly within a few days to lessen depression. And both of those can be used together.
I think you need to assess what's going on with your symptoms for depression. And with something like St. John's wort, you have to make sure you're not taking any other medications that would be MAO inhibitors, because there can be harmful interactions. So you really need to check carefully, and there are many, many safe herbal formulas and supplements out there for treating depression.
All right, we're going to wrap it up now. Robin, John, and Terry, very briefly, about 20 seconds apiece. Robin, that phone number again, you want people to call their congressperson so they can vote no on CAFTA, 202-224-3121. Robin,
yes, George.
Thank
yes.
you so much for being on the program.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. John Rappaport as well. Do you have a 15-second goodbye to us, John?
Don't let them take your freedom away from you. That's what I'm telling you.
And Terry?
Oh, absolutely. It's just been wonderful to help share this information, and let's just get out there and not let this happen.
And now let's see what happens, indeed. So thanks to all three of you for being on the roundtable discussion on a topic that is important to you. It's something that's going to affect you, as John Rappaport said, long term. So let's make sure you continue to have the rights to do what you're going to do. They should simply keep things the way they are. I think we'd all be happy with that. I could live with that, to be sure. Now, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to go a little more paranormal. We're going to talk about the Nephilim. So make sure you're part of that. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.